Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. We have 14 active lighthouses along the Connecticut coastline. Now, unless you're a sea captain, you probably just find them a little bit cute and maybe romantic, but if you're on the water at night, those lighthouses can mean the difference between life and death. Our guest to talk about them today is Elizabeth Wood, Executive Director of the Stonington Historical Society. The Society is responsible for the Stonington Lighthouse Museum, the oldest such museum for lighthouses in the country. Elizabeth will be along in just a moment to talk more about that. This week's trivia question: what's 10 inches thick, floats like a boat, and was the U.S.'s second largest export in the 1800s, second only to cotton? Well, we're going to have the answer for you after the program, so you'll know the subject of our next episode. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. Well, this episode, which revolves around one of my personally favorite topics, lighthouses, is going to feature a discussion with Elizabeth Wood. Now, Elizabeth is the executive director of the Stonington Historical Society, and back a long time ago, they bought the Stonington Lighthouse after it was decommissioned, and then turned the lighthouse into a museum that you can actually go and visit, and it's the oldest museum for lighthouses in the entire country. Now, before we get into the interview with Elizabeth, I want to list some facts and figures about the lighthouses in Connecticut. Now, over the centuries, Connecticut has built and operated 21 different lighthouses. 14 of them are actually still active today. Now, we're going to quickly list those going from east to west. So out in New London, where the Thames River comes into Long Island Sound, there is the New London Harbor Light and the New London Ledge Light. In Groton, the other side of the Thames River shoreline, Avery Point. In Old Saybrook, that's where the Connecticut River comes into the Sound, two lighthouses, Lind Point and Saybrook Breakwater. You actually walk out the breakwater to get to that lighthouse. In the New Haven area, two to talk about. One is the Faulkner Island Light in Guilford, which is pretty far off the coastline and on a very small island. And then there's the Southwest Ledge Light that's in New Haven. The other seven are in the western portion of the state, two of them in Bridgeport. Stratford Shoal Light, that's technically in Long Island Sound outside Bridgeport, and then the Tongue Point Light in Bridgeport. Stratford's got one where the Housatonic River comes into the Sound. It's the Stratford Point Light. Fairfield has Penfield Reef Light, and we're going to come back to that one in a second. Two in Norwalk, Green's Ledge and Peck's Ledge, and finally one in Stamford, the Stamford Harbor Ledge. Now, each of those lighthouses has what's known in the nautical world as its character. That means that the light flashes on the top of the lighthouse in a certain rhythm. In this way, the sea captains know just which lighthouse they're looking at. Well, all lighthouses, not just the ones in Connecticut, but all nationwide, are automated, meaning no more of those lighthouse keepers of yesteryear manning the light and keeping it going. There is one notable exception. In 1989, Boston passed a law that the Boston Light in Boston Harbor, which was the first one in this country, is required to have a lighthouse keeper to keep that tradition going. Now, most of the Connecticut lighthouses are on land, on the shore, but there are some that are actually built on rock formations out in Long Island Sound. If you've ever taken the ferry boat from New London to Block Island, you've passed the New London Ledge Lighthouse. You also went by the Latimer Reef Lighthouse, but that's technically in New York State. Now, another one of those lighthouses in the water is Penfield Reef in Fairfield. I said we'd get back to this one. It's been the object of ghost stories for a very long time, and it follows the untimely death of one of their lighthouse keepers whose boat capsized while the guy was trying to return to shore. and it is said that Frederick Jordan has come back to visit from time to time, and subsequent lighthouse keepers claim that they have seen his ghost. Well, we have an additional 5 lighthouses in Connecticut that are no longer active, and 2 that are in kind of a special category. They have a light on, but they're not formally used anymore for navigation. And those 2 are one in Greenwich, the Great Captain Island Light, and the other one in Bridgeport, right at the very tip of Seaside Park in Bridgeport, the Black Rock Harbor Light on Fairweather Island. Well, today, though, we're going to focus on one of those 5 inactive lighthouses, the one in Stonington, Connecticut. Now, you can't get any further east and still be in Connecticut, at least along Long Island Sound, than when you're in Stonington, because it borders Rhode Island. Now, Stonington was settled in the 1600s, but it didn't get around to building a lighthouse until the early 1800s, 1823 to be exact, and it was by then that shipping had started to come in, boat builders and people doing expeditions and that sort of thing, and it became really the crux of Stonington's economic system was shipping. Now, when they got around to building the lighthouse in 1823, it was right on the point, Stonington Point, if you happen to know it, a beautiful location. The problem was that within 10 years, water was already creeping up to the edge of it. Wind and rain during storms would come into it because it was apparently not built very well. The cement quality was pretty poor. Anyway, long story short, in 1840, they scrapped the idea of having the lighthouse there. They built it on higher ground just a little bit further north, and it's still there to this day, and you can go see it. It's gorgeous. So after about 50 years of service, though, the Stonington Lighthouse was officially decommissioned, and it was eventually then bought by the Stonington Historical Society. And that's where we say hello to their executive director, Elizabeth Wood. Elizabeth, when you look at the facts and figures about lighthouses, there's over 18,000 lighthouses around the world, about 780 of them in the United States. I kept thinking, boy, Connecticut's got a lot because they've got 14 active. Actually, the state with the most lighthouses is Michigan, with 115, which is, you know, when you stop and think about it, I guess it makes sense. But we've got our 14 in Connecticut, and you happen to be the executive director of the Historical Society with the lighthouse in Stonington that's the furthest east in Connecticut, which is pretty cool. First of all, tell me what it is like to just sort of walk in the building where the lighthouse is. What kind of feeling do you get when you walk in there?
When you walk into Stonington's lighthouse, you are immediately stepping back in time. You have these massive stone walls. You pass by the stone tower with the stone stairs. And as you enter, it hasn't changed very much in 200 years. It is a museum, a lighthouse and a museum, but it's also a museum of Stonington history. So you're immediately surrounded by artifacts and belongings from the people that lived there, but also from other parts of Stonington as well. So it is definitely a walk back in time.
I don't know anybody. I don't think I've ever met anybody in life who doesn't love lighthouses. Something very magical and mystical about them. And you come around a corner and you see it and you go, oh, it's a lighthouse. It's beautiful. And I guess what I'm wondering is, I never really understand how they worked over time. And if, without getting into too much detail, if you could give us sort of a little curriculum rundown of how did lighthouses work from the days when I guess we used whale oil all the way up to electricity?
Sure. Well, actually, lighthouses go back further than that, 2,000 years or more. And the first lighthouses were just open fires built on platforms. They have developed over the years. So in the United States, the oldest lighthouse, I think, is in Boston Harbor. But they're towers, and they're usually 20, 30 feet or taller. And the light is kept burning at the top of that tower. So in the beginning, they used whale oil. And so the tower is glass around the top. And they used, initially, it was a Winslow light that incorporates a parabolic reflector. So that fire is then amplified out through the glass so that you can see it from far away. In the 1850s and 60s, the Fresnel lens becomes popular. It's invented by a Frenchman. It was a huge improvement over the American Winslow lens. The Fresnel lens was a series of glass, and it's cut glass, so it amplified that light even further. And lighthouse towers are round, so you can see 360 degrees around. So you're always able to look in any direction, and that light is also reflected in any direction. So mostly they are used for aids to navigation, but sometimes they're just to mark the entrance to a harbor as well. And Stonington's coastline, Long Island Sound, is especially treacherous. So we do have some lighthouses that are out in the water that mark hazards. They're houses, really.
How many lighthouse attendants did the Stonington Lighthouse have over the course of its life?
We had a series of lighthouse keepers. Some of them were really interesting, like accomplished sailors and explorers. Others only stuck around for a year or so before they moved on to other ventures. I think there is a total of 8. A lighthouse keeper lived there year-round. And a lighthouse keeper lived at the Stonington Lighthouse year-round as well. Stonington's lighthouse incorporates living quarters as well as the tower. You didn't have to go outside to keep the light lit. You could just go upstairs.
Now that's something I want to get into, which was the life of a lighthouse keeper. And I think probably growing up, we've all heard a story or two about some hurricane coming and these poor people who had to get up there and make sure the light was still on and whatnot. Was it really that melodramatic? I mean, it sounds like it was.
I think it definitely was. So the federal government took over lighthouses and employed lighthouse keepers around 1797 or so. They had a book of rules they had to follow. So they were responsible for keeping the light lit from the sitting to the rising of the sun. So as soon as dusk started to fall, they had to keep that light lit all night long until the morning. So they were awake when everyone else was asleep.
And I read somewhere else they couldn't take a day off.
People got sick. Our lighthouse keeper, the first keeper, was William Potter, and he was the lighthouse keeper for almost 20 years. And when he died, his wife Patty became the lighthouse keeper, and she was the lighthouse keeper for another 12 years. But they had 8 children when they moved into the 1840 lighthouse, and I am certain that those kids had plenty of chores as well. But above all else, they had to keep the light lit.
And that's amazing because you would think you'd want your parents to be awake in the morning when you get up and they're just getting off of work.
Mm-hmm, right. Our lighthouse is one of the only ones that is accessible by land. So they didn't live remotely. They could have maybe asked a neighbor to come mind the light for a night or two or something like that.
When we talk about what lighthouses are used for, I think the easy answer is, hey, these are rocky shores, don't come in here, or this is a harbor, please do come in here. What were other reasons for building lighthouses?
The United States government, when they took over the lighthouses as well as the lighthouse keepers' corps, it was really to preserve their shipping interests. We fought wars over shipping interests, I mean, the Revolutionary War, as well as the War of 1812. So I think it was protecting traffic and business interests, as well as keeping people safe.
Now, Stonington, as I understand it, can lay claim to having the oldest lighthouse museum in the country. Is that true?
That is true. So the Stonington Historical Society purchased the lighthouse from the federal government in 1925. We think this is one of the earliest instances of the government getting rid of a lighthouse and letting someone purchase it. Like they just sold the one in New London, but this is one of the earliest instances of that. The Historical Society purchased it with the express intent of creating a museum. They needed a place to store their artifacts and to have exhibits. So this is the earliest instance of a lighthouse becoming a museum.
And did Stonington make the technology transfer from whale oil to, I guess, electricity before it closed?
No. No, they did switch to kerosene, but the 1840 lighthouse was decommissioned in 1889 before electricity.
What happened if the light went out?
There is no record of that, but I'm sure there was a small panic in the household to get that light lit again.
Did any ships ever wreck on the shore despite the lighthouse being there?
Not in Stonington that I know of. There are no major disasters that happen off of our coast. Watch Hill, Rhode Island does have a couple of disasters in the later 19th century and 20th century. Steamships would wreck, but that was not because of the lighthouse not being lit or anything like that. It was more because of the ocean and the waves and storms.
It really is pretty treacherous in Stonington on the coastline there because of, that's, I guess, how Stonington gets its name. There's a lot of stones and rocks off the coast, number one. And number two, the part that I was not aware of until we started talking was just how developed Stonington's shipbuilding was and how active it was during the whaling era. Could you speak to that?
Sure. Well, we know from historical records that as early as 1819 or so, that we had 10 to 25 fishing vessels that were based in Stonington. We were a fishing community from the very beginning. But in the 1820s, we also had other shipping interests. There were boatyards and shipbuilding yards in Stonington Borough. And Stonington was home to a number of explorers who explored the world. There are the Fanning brothers, one of whom is credited with the discovery of the Fanning Islands and is also credited with the first to circumnavigate the globe, and that's in the 1820s. And in the 1820s, Nathaniel Palmer left Stonington, having grown up in a shipyard where his father built ships, on an expedition to the South Seas, where he's credited with discovering Antarctica.
So let's personalize this a little bit. What happens to Elizabeth Wood when she's out traveling along the coastline and sees a lighthouse somewhere else? Do you feel like you just got to pull over and take a look at it and maybe snap a picture or two?
Definitely. I love lighthouses like everyone else loves lighthouses. And I think we romanticize the lives of lighthouse keepers and their families. Of course, I'm always looking to see how those lighthouses might be different than our lighthouse, imagining the people who lived and worked there. So they are a unique architectural facet of our society. So they definitely all have stories to tell. The last time I traveled in the Carolinas, we visited three or four. And those lighthouses are 10 times higher than our lighthouse. They're really spectacular, but I still love our small lighthouse here in Stonington.
Wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. You know, we have 169 municipalities here in Connecticut, and only one of them, Stonington, can make the claim of being able to directly give you access to the Atlantic Ocean. All the other shoreline communities face Long Island Sound. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Elizabeth Wood, Executive Director of the Stonington Historical Society and the Stonington Lighthouse Museum. The answer to this week's trivia question, what's 10 inches thick, floats like a boat, and was the U.S.'s second largest export in the 1800s, second only to cotton? Well, the answer is ice. Yes, ice. Ice is still a very important business in the U.S., and 200 years ago, it literally changed the way we thought about our food supply. And it was important in Connecticut. So next week on Amazing Tales CT, we're going to take a look at one of the largest former ice harvesting operations in New England. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe, and please stay healthy.